property here, and I hope you can find some way to keep it in a natural state. So we're happy that the Parks Bureau and the City of Portland, I hope, is moving forward with purchasing this property. As Mike pointed out, it is a very prominent knoll. It has a very prominent location on Terwilliger Parkway, right adjacent to the parkway. It's one of the few places in that section, the only place in that section of the parkway where rather than sloping down to the east, it slopes up to the east. So it kind of enfolds the roadway in that location. Seen from the east side of the river, from Waterfront Park, from the Ross Island Bridge, from the tram, it's a very prominent knoll that sticks out from the rest of the hillside and the houses around it. As Mike mentioned, the Olmsted and Miesch plans for Terwilliger Parkway showed Eagle Point as one of two major viewpoints. The other one was Elk Point, and that got developed with a succession of way stations. Now we have the chart house there, but we do have a viewpoint there, which is nice. We'd like to sort of fulfill that vision to have two major viewpoints on Terwilliger there. It's unfortunate the city didn't move ahead with that original purchase of 4.3 acres in 1907 or 1912. Interestingly, the Burkhart family, which owned the house for much, from I think 1904 to until it was sold to John Kenward in 1970, the Burkhart family, I think in the 1920s, they recognized that desire for a viewpoint there, and they dedicated a right-of-way, which is Lowell Lane, that loops around the point there. They dedicated that right-of-way through their private property for public use. And then a few years later, they sold for $1 the downslope lots from Lowell Lane for public use to the city. And those are now actually shown on city maps as public right-of-way as well. So obviously, they were in support of that idea of a viewpoint there. And unfortunately, it seems the city never acted to develop a viewpoint there. And in 1963, part of Lowell Lane was vacated, possibly by the Burkharts as well as adjacent property owners on the other side, because nothing had ever happened with it. So certainly purchasing Eagle Point fulfills this longstanding vision for Terwilliger Parkway, but we also hope that the city will move forward and develop that viewpoint there. Finally get some kind of public access in there and develop the viewpoint so we have that wonderful view off to the east out over the river and the east side and the buttes in the East County and off to Mount Hood and the Cascades beyond. I also want to mention that in July of 2004, the City of Portland agreed on a memorandum of understanding with OHSU and the city, and it was related to the Markham Hill plan, the tram, the South Waterfront, and in that MOU, OHSU committed $50,000 to an update of the Terwilliger Parkway plan, and unfortunately, a lack of consensus within the Southwest community put that on hold, and it was finally, I think, the MOU was modified to say when funds become available for the city's portion of that update, then that project would go forward. But nevertheless, OHSU had committed themselves to $50,000 to fund that update of the plan. Now, I'm not sure if an update of the Parkway plan is really on the radar still, but it seems that there might be a way to get OHSU to carry through with that commitment to the Parkway in some kind of planning process, either for this viewpoint, another project we've been talking to the Park Bureau about is an interpretive signage plan and sort of a general capital improvement plan for the Parkway. We're looking at building additional gateways. We've talked to OHSU about that $50,000 commitment. They're a bit coy about that. And so any kind of help and push we get from the city would be appreciated. So I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our presentation.
So could you, this is really fantastic. I'm very pleased to support this. I'm just curious, what will be the public access plan for Eagle Point? Will it just build on the current driveway and the Lowell Lane, or?
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. I think, in our acquisition processes, we don't do a master plan ahead of time. We know that this was identified primarily for development of a viewpoint. But we would need a public process to talk about what does that mean, and accessibility, and does that mean does it need seats and benches and all of that. So the next step for us would be to do that planning work and involve both the Friends, the Neighborhood Association, and all the Portlanders who enjoy Terwilliger Parkway to kind of come up with, what does that mean? How do we take that 1912 vision, 1982 vision, and now that we have the entire parcel, including, a fairly rare thing, which is a piece of flat land along Terwilliger Parkway, what should we do? So those are questions we'll be asking as we move ahead.
Okay. And once we acquire it and the house is deconstructed and all that, I mean, I assume there'll be some interim, immediate public access opportunities.
Yeah, that. Thank you for bringing up. Yeah, we'll have to create kind of an interim access plan that uses existing driveway or something while we go through a planning process so that it could be open as quickly as possible.
Okay. Thanks.
So why would we deconstruct the house since we already have a viewpoint from the house and it rains a lot in Oregon? Why would we deconstruct it before we have that discussion as to how we're going to provide public access?
Thank you, Commissioner. That's a good question. There can be asked, sort of answered on several levels. First of all, the going back to the vision for the site was really a parkway that has designated viewpoints along it. And though the parkway originally was designed for pleasure driving, what has changed is now Terwilliger Parkway, though it accommodates cars, as a place for bicyclists and pedestrians primarily. The house takes up a pretty good size of that flat portion of the site. And house over 100 years old. We've taken a look at we've assessed the house and asbestos issues and lead paint and ADA access. The challenge for us is we don't have good purpose for the house. And in addition to, I think our estimate is $150,000 to $200,000 just to make it accessible, the ongoing requirement for a building that doesn't have a designated purpose is really a challenge. And since the vision hasn't been that there be some facility there, that it's really sort of meant to be a place that you come to along Terwilliger Parkway. You go out, you see this panoramic view, and then you continue to move through. That's the primary reason. On the other side, just in terms of our assets, Portland Parks and Recreation has many, many, many older buildings that don't have purposes. For example, park restrooms that are wonderful little buildings, but were built in ways that they can't provide ADA access. And so we have subsequently then built an accessible bathroom, but we've got in this park a building that that doesn't have a purpose. And that's what we're afraid of here, is that since the public benefit primarily has been views, having a structure, and then trying to figure out who's the tenant and how does that get maintained, it seems like we're adding something to our obligations that we really have no way of taking care of long term.
And Anton, does the Friends of Terwilliger have a position on that?
We are very interested in being able to use the house as a kind of a visitor center and a display place for information about the parkway, about the Olmsteads, about the Olmsted plan for Portland, about connected park systems, about restoration. We would very much like to be able to use it for that. We don't have the resources at this point to really maintain the house or develop it. So the desire is there, but the ability at this point is not. So we took a vote recently and just felt like we couldn't commit ourselves at this point to that. if we were given, you know, more time, we could look for, we'd have to look for partnerships to make something like that happen.
And are others going to testify on this?
Yes.
Great. Further questions for the team here? And Don, did you want to add anything from Trust for Public Land, since you're the other partner to this, and then we'll call out public testimony?
I'm here to answer questions.
Okay.
From there, and if you need any additional knowledge on what's going on, I'm here.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
So we have people signed up to testify, Carla?
Yes, we have 5 people signed up. The first 3, please come on up, are Bill Hawkins, Jay Moore, and Wes Reicher.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Me first, Jay. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness.
You're on first.
I would like to add my voice,
Mr. Name.
Mayor and fellow commissioners.
I'd like to just put your name into the record, Jay.
Bill Hawkins. Sorry. I have followed the parkway. I should say my family has followed this parkway for over 110 years from its inception to its celebration of 100 years and so forth. So it means a great deal to me to see this wonderful land acquisition of adding Eagle Point. It was in the original plan. It is clearly a feature, an Olmstedian feature of the type of planning that he did. He had viewpoints incorporated in all his plans, as Meech did on the top of Mount Tabor. There were wonderful viewpoints, and those viewpoints have miraculously been kept. There are viewpoints on Council Crest, all of the other buttes, Rocky Butte. In many of them, there were structures at the top, at the viewpoint. So it could be said that having a structure, a small pavilion of some sort, would be a celebration of this viewpoint, having it there. This little house has been greatly discussed. It is a nice little house. It's not a major landmark, but it is a structure from which the view was everything when it was built. The porch encompasses that view. I would like to suggest there's a compromise on looking at the house, certainly that it be allowed to have an interim time to study the matter in further degree here. It might, in the compromise, there might be making the house smaller, back to its original size or something. There's certainly a ways to accommodate public use, ADA use and such. I think it has become, by happenstance, a part of this experience. You now approach the house through a very narrow little roadway with wonderful stone walls going up to it. The experience of the view doesn't really happen until you get onto the porch, and then all of a sudden it opens up. Of course, in Oregon here, we have a ever-present problem of the views disappearing behind rapidly growing firs and maples. So all our viewpoints are constantly in this state of needing attention to bring them up. But in tying it back to a very Olmsted thought, it is a wonderful place. It has kind of a magic to it. The city, everybody gains by taking advantage of these wonderful places in our city where the view is everybody's. It is the public's view. It is a place to know that we have a magical place, a place where we connect with our mountains, with the wonderfulness of this location that is Portland. So the views, certainly in 1903 when the report was written, and just as much today, they are very much of the specialness of Portland. So focusing down on this little house, I'd like to endorse my friend's viewpoints that there might be a very strong reason for keeping it, putting it in the plan. Certainly the original drive could go through, which was a right-of-way that was in the was put in later on. But the little house, I think, should be considered further. Thank you.
Morning.
Mayor Hill, City Council. My name is Jay Maurer. I live in Portland. I'm one of the volunteers with Friends of Twilliger, and I was serving on the day of the big celebration last year, the centennial, staffing a history booth, and at the end of the occasion, the road had been closed for bicyclists and walkers. It was a great day, and I walked back over and go down
one of the streets, and I saw the for sale sign on this property. I was amazed, and so I alerted others, and I called the number and just arranged a visit to the house with Kirk Kenwood, and he has a lot of neat things in there and various documents and photos of the house. The house used to have a windmill that brought the water up, I guess, and also on the wall he had a framed copy of the Oregonian from 1904. And I've borrowed the original from him and had copies made, and I've given a digital version to the park staff. But here is one side of the Oregonian is a rendering by the Oregonian's artist, and the headline says, Mr. Olmsted's plan for Portland's parks, parkways, and boulevards. Uh-huh. And so there's a scheme of the city and various scenes of what could be, what the public could do out and about on these new things. And the flip side of that same page is this page, and it says here, other picturesque hillside homes in Portland. And it says here, from several eminences in South Portland, I guess we'd use the word viewpoint, from several eminences in South Portland, Vancouver and Oregon City may be seen. And here on this photograph is the house in question. This is the Eagle Point House. So this is pretty neat. So even in the house, there's history there. And another thing that I was impressed with the house was, like old houses, it has high ceilings and all the rooms have fireplaces. It's just a different experience going in there. It takes you back in time. And I think that's one of the neat things about Portland. We have various chances to go back in time and see things. And I think it has potential to be a resource, a stewardship through education. People don't know about Olmsted. People don't know about Niche. And they need to know these things. This would be a place where these stories could be told and retold. So I think the house should be saved for a while to help it find a way and yes or no if it could be worked out or not. And I think it'd be incumbent upon the Friends of Twiller to then find the partnerships to lessen the burden on parks because we understand the budget necessities. Those are my main points. I'm thrilled for this day. I'm thrilled that the city can acquire this property. It's a great day. This is 100 years in the making, and I'm very, very much in support of it, and thank you for your attention.
Jay, may I ask?
Sure.
Jay. Does the Friends of Twillaga currently have a base station or a visitor center or anything like that?
No.
And have you had any discussions with the Architectural Heritage Foundation or the Bosco Millikan Foundation about this property?
Anton has. They are also short-funded, but they are definitely for saving it. I've had talks with some email exchanges with one of the vice presidents of Hoffman Construction, Bart Eberwine, who used to be a neighbor up there. I said, could you partner with us in the future? We're working on this, but we would need some ADA access, ramps, maybe remodel of the door, a bathroom. Could Hoffman Construction be involved? He said, let me know who's around. Then I talked to the IBEW, Local 48. Do you guys work on projects for good causes? Yes, we do. He says, I'm busy up in Olympia, but call me back. So some initial positive things. So because there are probably electrical issues. We know there'd be ADA issues. So in just a couple of phone calls and emails, I've gotten at least some nods. That's why we need more time to really, once the tenant is vacated, we can actually bring people there and have them look this over. So we've been kind of constrained by time and availability.
And how much time do you think you would need?
Well, I would say surely a year, maybe 2 years. So if we're going to make an extension, I'd go for the 2 years.
Thank you.
Can I just ask a related follow-up question? Because I remember when this came to parks and was enthusiastically embraced by parks as a connecting the wildlife corridor and providing a view. I don't remember ever in the discussions any conversations about preserving the house. In fact, the overwhelming value of this site was to create it was without the house to have a place for people to capture the sight lines. And I have to say, if someone were to come forward and say we've just discovered that it's the only surviving work of an architect who is our most noted architect, or something happened there and there's a last-minute reprieve, I might view it differently. But I almost regret we're having this conversation because the entire objective was to acquire this as a place for people to come and and enjoy the views. And I feel that we're almost on the verge here of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. This is a unique partnership that's happened very quickly with a lot of resources being dedicated. And we're talking about a house that was never intended to be preserved. And I will tell you, as the former Parks Commissioner that has burdened, and a bureau that's burdened with lots of surplus houses they cannot maintain and is looking at a 10% cut, I almost think it's irresponsible of us to be talking about maintaining this building and committing public resources when we frankly can't maintain what we have. So I thought this was going to be a celebration about a huge community win, and somehow it feels like it's now about a house that frankly no one cared enough about to mention throughout the entire time we talked about this enterprise. So I just offer that as an observation, and I frankly regret we're having this conversation because it was not part of the original vision that was presented to Parks, and I would rather be saluting Parks for being incredibly responsive to a community vision and celebrating that win. And instead, we're talking about a building which, from my perspective, actually obscures the view. So just my perspective, but I think it's we're getting off the rail here somehow, and I don't know why, and I'm sorry we are, frankly.
Wes, please.
Mayor Hales and commissioners.
You're on. Yeah. No, you're on.
I have a presentation regarding the home. I don't know if I need to do something to get to it here.
I think if you're already loaded into the system, Carla can...
I'm not sure where it's at, Carla.
...initiate it for you.
I'd like to just take you quickly through the home so you can see it. We only, as Friends of Terwilliger, were able to get into the home and actually see its assets and its possibilities on the 4th of April, less than this month. Hopefully, let me see if it's going to load. It's still loading. Technology is fun when it works. Come on.
While the technology is happening, I might just add that during the initial outreach to Parks about this property and then just these recent, it's coming together, there was a long period of kind of silence while the parties were negotiating. So we were kind of in the dark for quite a number of months about any discussions.
No, I appreciate that, sir. But yes. But I was the Parks Commissioner when this came forward, and I remember what the impetus was. And I know there'll be a period of dark, and you just got in because you weren't able to ask to get in the building years ago. And I mean, this has been something that's been a priority item for the community for a long time. And I don't mean the house. I mean acquiring the dirt for a particular use. And I don't begrudge your raising it, and I admire your advocacy. But at this stage, to come to council and say, you've got no money, no committed partners, and it's a building that has a huge question mark in terms of the cost of renovating, I just think it puts us in the position of being asked to do something which frankly seems irresponsible, particularly at a time when we have dwindling resources and are rightfully criticized for not maintaining what we have.
Wes, did we manage to load your
Yes, we did. I got it ready to go.
There we go.
I just want to quickly go through the home so you can see it and so the community can see it, because most people have no idea this even exists. This is the house from a photograph that we took of a photograph in the Kenward house on the 4th, the Kenward home, Eagle Point at the top of the hill. This is the private drive that you see going up to the home and the nice brick rock wall and the detail that's there. It's really quite nice. This is the home itself and the parking space next to it. Moving around from the north side of the home to the porch and the east side of the facade, the large porch that sees the view to the city. The porch itself, the nice width of it, the view to the city, and the unobstructed view from the columns. An incredible view, but you can see the trees are really taking away the view. The east side of the house, again, the historical detail, it's a shingle-style home, 1893. Moving around, it's got an unreinforced masonry foundation, definitely in good shape, but it's of that vintage. The north side of the home, you can see the detail. It's actually in nice shape on the north side. This is the structure that at one point held the windmill for water pumping purposes, and you can see the detail on the home. Moving around to the back, this is the west facade. It's in good shape. I mean, again, for a home of this vintage and it's been taken care of, it does need some exterior work, but for the most part, it's in great shape. Inside the front door, there's the staircase leading up to the second floor. There's living room to the left, parlor to the right. This is the living room, radiator heat, fireplace, built-in, or hearth, built-in. This is the parlor to the right, fireplace, view out to the east from the parlor, 10-foot ceilings. This is the dining room, then the look back to the entrance, the pantry, butler pantry, as you move through into the kitchen. Definitely dated. There's a half bath in the kitchen, stairs to the basement, landing. You can see it's dry, unreinforced. You can see the asbestos wrap pipes. They're accessible. They're easily removed with, of course, the right abatement technique. Exterior entrance with a covered hatch on the outside. Again, further parts of the basement. The boiler that's there, natural gas boiler for the home. Mud sill, and then stairs, upstairs, landing. There's three bedrooms upstairs. There's the covered over the porch access space. And then you've got the various bedrooms. So there's three bedrooms upstairs. You can see the architectural detail in the space. And then the bathroom. Exterior of the home, and finally the porch and the plan. The plan envisioned in 83 was never to inquire the or acquire the property with the home. It was intended to actually make the loop happen. We go back to this. You can the property, the acquisition is stellar. Don't get me wrong. The speed with which the house and the consideration for the home and it's moving through the process is concerning. The house is a resource that Portland is acquiring with the SDC funds and with as a park resource. All we're asking is time to consider the options regarding the structure as a resource to parks, as a resource to Southwest, as a resource Friends of Terwilliger and other groups like Markham Nature Park and other groups that could partner. There's nothing to be necessarily gained by removing it today. It's removing an obligation for parks maintenance over the next number of years, but the money that's being allocated for this acquisition could easily be allocated 2 years from now for demolition, deconstruction. But to actually, once the house is gone, it's gone. And I appreciate your position, Commissioner Fish, regard to this issue. We did bring it to parks. There's been a fair, serious period of time with complete darkness because of the need to make the deal happen with Trust for Public Land. We did not have any real idea that the home was of decent shape and it could potentially be a resource. And that's why we're asking for consideration at this time. It puts a burden on the Friends of Terwilliger, certainly, but honestly, Parks has a huge history of successful partnerships with Friends groups, Leech Botanical Garden, Friends of Overlook House, and there's many other examples, the old church in Selwood. Portland thrives with volunteers, and Parks recognizes that. I passionately feel that we should be exploring the options on this and simply not demolishing the house as part of this ordinance.
So I've got very knowledgeable people here. You mentioned it's an unreinforced foundation.
Unreinforced masonry foundation. Yeah, it's just so brick.
Wouldn't that require significant seismic upgrades if it were to be devoted to some public use?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of other facilities in Portland that are unreinforced masonry that need to be seismically upgraded, and a lot of homes in Portland. It definitely should get that treatment. Should the house be destroyed in an earthquake? Well, honestly, your resource is going to be demolished if you don't change the ordinance. So what's the benefit of, if it needs that kind of work eventually, it doesn't need to be done tomorrow, but we need to do it eventually.
And again, I know Anton's still in the audience, but you're both Friends of Terwilliger.
Correct.
So
correct.
The position of Friends of Terwilliger again on the house is?
We voted on the house to not save the structure given the month time consideration that Portland Parks gave us. We were given a month to consider options, to look at partnerships, to consider uses. We give it our best shot in that short time frame. A month is a very limited amount of time to come up with an answer. We chose to not move forward on the house. We're asking for an extension of 2 years to explore options before demolition. If that's not possible, we have a position where the house would be deconstructed, and the property, of course, is the desired goal. But you have a structure that allows public use. You have a structure to allow covered views. And there's nothing to preclude public use with the acquisition keeping the home in the short term.
And why 2 years as opposed to
When we met with Director Abate, he said that we're likely to be in the same position a year from now, given the process time it takes to go through these options, bring partners in, and to build an actual process that needs to go forward for conditional use and other things. He said we'd likely be in the same position a year from now, so I believe 2 years is sufficient to actually explore the options and actually come up with a responsible plan for the home.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
More folks signed up?
Yes, we have three more. Susan Ignor, Joe Walsh, and Charles Johnson.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mayor Hales, commissioners, my name is Susan Ignor. I'm on the board of the Homestead Neighborhood Association, which is the neighborhood association surrounding the Eagle Point property. When we learned last fall that the property might be available, we had a meeting about it in September and voted unanimously to support acquisition of the property. We wrote Commissioner Fish and Director Abate, and I'm going to read from Eric Schnell's, our president's, letter because it says a lot. Portland truly has the opportunity to acquire perhaps one of the most unique properties in the city. We discussed this possibility at our Homestead Neighborhood Association meeting on September 4 and unanimously approved the following motion. The Homestead Neighborhood Association fully supports the public acquisition of the Eagle Point property and urges city and county offices to work in this regard in accordance with the intent and provisions set by the city ordinance and the Terwilliger Parkway Plan of 1983. We really believe that the addition of this property to the city's natural assets would be a wonderful, wonderful contribution to the future, to our children and grandchildren and other people who will come to treasure this city. That's the position of the Homestead Neighborhood Association. We did not talk much that I recall about saving the house or not saving it. Dr. Schnell and his wife considered acquiring it and looked at it extensively, and he said at the meeting if they were to buy the house, it would be a lifetime before they would be able to use it, to have it be safe and up to code, and before he'd be willing to have his children, who were quite young, be in a house without, say, the reinforcing and without the upgraded heating system. The house has knob and tube wiring, which I find a little daunting. It frightens me very much as a fire hazard. I'm saying that's what the Neighborhood Association has said. We did not talk about, as I said, acquiring the house. I, like a lot of other people here, wear two hats. I also sit on the board of Friends of Terwilliger and was one of the people, like Mr. Maurer, who noticed this for sale sign last July during the Terwilliger Parkway Centennial. Personally, I've lived in Portland for a little over 25 years. When I moved here in 1987, Terwilliger Parkway is out my back door. I mean, literally 10 yards from my back door, the parkway starts. I realized how extremely fortunate we were to have bought a house in the neighborhood with the parkway. As I came to know the parkway, I became aware of of a house that was kind of back from the road, further south from us, that I came to know was the Norris house. And I said, well, what's that nice house doing there? It looks kind of derelict and falling down, and why isn't somebody doing anything? It has people's furniture in it and crockery and everything in the windows. What's going on? What I remember from the explanation was that the Norrises had, perhaps in a will or perhaps by a gift, had deeded the house to the city, that Friends of Terwilliger had taken on the responsibility of the house, and then found that they, Friends of Terwilliger, and the city were unable to deal with what that house needed in terms of, and again, this is totally hearsay, seismic upgrades, electrical, other safety considerations, and were unable to use the property. Further, they were unable to sell it to realize any benefit. And eventually, the house had to be torn down because it became a haven for folks who don't have any other place to live. At one point, there was a great storm, and the house filled up with water, and it was just a hazard. It's in some senses, it still is.
Thank
what's
you.
Left
I just need
it.
You to wrap up soon because
so,
you have your time.
Personally, I would be very reluctant if I were a politician representing citizens of Portland in this economic environment to take on any additional monetary burden with the acquisition of this house. I just wouldn't do it.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Joe?
My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. I thought Commissioner Fritz's question was a good question about the house. I don't have a great deal of information, so I listened very closely to you, Commissioner Fish, about, hey, guys, you know, we were going to put this nice little thing that we could sit around and look at the view, and the house is in a way, so let's get rid of the house. If we get rid of the house, we don't have to fix it, and it's cheaper. Well, my personality doesn't go along with that kind of thinking. I don't like cheap. I like dignity. I like goodness. I like beauty. Now, it seems to me that you have a choice here. Your people are telling you, give them a little bit of more time. 2 years took me back. But you don't have to do 2 years. You could just put this off and get some kind of evaluation on the house to see if it's worthwhile to save. Because if you use that house and you can save it and it doesn't cost you a fortune, you could use it as a souvenir place, a place maybe you could serve coffee, whatever. I mean, we have great minds around here. You should think of something. Back off a little bit. Take your time. Take a breath. Maybe next week, maybe next month, somebody will come up and say, you know what? We can save this house, and it's a bargain. Thank you.
Thanks. Morning.
Thank you, commissioners. I am thrilled to hear that there's an 1893 house.
Just put your name into the record for us.
Charles Johnson. That might be valuable to save, but and I'm not totally on board with Commissioner Fish's position, but I do think the idea of parks having to protect this property for 2 years is of concern. I hope you will immediately pass the acquisition of the land, but maybe you can put in an amendment so that in the fall, perhaps, if there is not a combination effort. I don't think Friends of Terwilliger maybe wants to be burdened with this. There needs to be a Friends of the House. They need to present to the council in the fall, and you need to have a firm date that you can say, it's beautiful, but we couldn't save it. To get in bed for a two-year maintenance of a house is a significant problem for the city. But on the other hand, some people maybe feel there's been a limitation of public input. So I hope you can pass and close on the acquisition of the land and amend, if necessary, to have a process where in the time of less than 2 years, the people who want to save the house can shake the trees of the directors and the Schnitzers and the Meyer Memorial Trust and the better endowed landholders in the area and can present something later on to the city. But I hope the council can find a middle path there. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Any others that are signed up, Carl?
No others signed up, but we had a request for someone to speak.
Okay.
Wanted to sign up?
Sure. Someone else wants to speak? Come on up, please. Morning.
My name's Lightning. We have a housing shortage. Save this 1893 historic house. It's a beautiful house. Has character. Absolutely amazing. Save it. You know, if you put a little bit of money in this house, I'd have to say it'd probably be more worth more than 50% of the overall costs they're paying currently. That's just my opinion. Beautiful house. Fair Housing Month plan. A Home for Everyone plan to end homelessness for Portland, Multnomah County. Approximately 1,700 people currently sleeping on sidewalks each night. Fair housing also means housing provided for everyone. 2% apartment vacancy factor currently in Portland. Multnomah County equates to a shortage of affordable apartments for rent. Housing, housing, housing is the best therapy for people with mental illness, drug addictions, and alcoholism problems. To cut down overtime costs for police, fire, medical, and also achieve maximum efficiency for businesses throughout Portland, Multnomah County, we must end homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County. All these plans have great ideas. Although I have just a few words to say, show me the money to get these 1,700 people off the sidewalks. Show me the money to take these ideas, put them into action, and create positive results. Show me the money to develop more affordable, low-income housing units. Here's a lightning continuous revenue plan. First, real estate developers building any new condominiums agree upon the inception that any sale that takes place throughout the existence of the condominium, a 1% of the 7% brokerage fee will be directed to a City Hall General Fund account to end homelessness. Very simple plan, straight to the point. This will create a continuous, ongoing, lightning revenue producing plan to end homelessness and to develop affordable housing. Example, $100 million overall condo sales, 1% of proceeds equal $1 million for the general fund. $1 billion overall condo sales, 1% of proceeds equal $10 million for general fund. Again, there is continuous ongoing revenue, which also benefits developers creating ways of ending homelessness. The plan will work. It should be implemented. There will be no more homelessness and nobody out on the sidewalks in the streets anymore. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Wow. Okay, any further questions for the team?
I have
council members.
One further. Two.
Oh, no, not for you, Lightning. Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
That was a reasonable assumption, but I meant Mike. Thank you.
So it's important to be clear right away that this is a spectacular achievement and a great cause for celebration. And as usual, there are sometimes tweaks to be had at the end. So I appreciate the conversation. Does Parks have the money to improve the property to provide public access once it's acquired?
Commissioner, it depends. In terms of interim access, yes. We don't have a master plan with a cost estimate, so I can't answer that question directly. I don't know. What I would say, though, is we propose to make this purchase using SDC funds, and this project, the development, would be eligible for SDC funding, at least the portion related to a viewpoint. If we were not to remove the house, one of the things, the challenges in the short term we need to do is we need to find $330,000, which is the value of the structure and the land underneath it, that could not be funded with SDC. So we would have to find a funding source for that in the purchase.
Say that again.
Could you repeat? Yeah,
sure. I'll say that again. Currently, with the vision of it being an expanding use, public access as a viewpoint, we can use system develop parks system development charges to purchase the property with that intent. We can't use SDCs for buildings and like community centers and facilities like that. So the house itself and its footprint are not eligible for SDC funds. So our calculation on the value of the house and property is $330,000, about $200,000 for the structure and $100,000, $110,000 for the land underneath it. So we would have to find another funding source in the very short term to consummate the deal to purchase from Trust for Public Land.
So the appraisal that we had done in November that came out at $910,000, that was just for the land?
No, Commissioner, that was for both the land and the structure.
So we're paying more than that, so as part of this deal. So I'm not understanding where you're currently getting the additional $300,000 plus.
Okay. The appraised value of the property, including structures and everything, is the $910,000. And we're using system development charges for all of it because we're saying that the use of the property is a viewpoint, and that's the purpose of it.
All of it.
Absolutely, all of it. Yeah. All of it, Mr. Mayor. So all I'm saying is that if we bifurcate that and say, maybe it would be helpful. I have an exhibit that might explain this.
We're on a roll. You just stick with the bifurcate. I think you had us.
Bifurcate.
If we bifurcated.
That's more confusing to me because clearly there's a viewpoint from the porch now. One of the options would be to take down part of the house and leave the historic porch.
And it has a small porch, and I'd say that in terms of the scale of that space, just the porch space, doesn't accommodate very many people, even once we provide some access. And I'm a division that we would have a large viewpoint that could accommodate a group, for example.
And do we have the money for that, and where is it in the queue as far as SDC-funded park improvements?
That goes back to we need to do a plan. But that project would be eligible for SDC funds. I don't know how much we would need because we haven't done a plan yet. Most of the time we acquire properties and we hold them, right? We recognize that there's a public benefit in having that property, and then sometimes within months and sometimes within years, we'll do a plan for how would we develop it. I think this is a prominent enough piece that we'd want to move fairly quickly on that.
So I'm not understanding how the whole property, including the house, is appraised at $910,000.
We might need you to have this conversation offline because I'm concerned about losing a quorum.
Okay,
here.
So if we could maybe set this over till next week.
I don't think we want to do that, but you tell me.
I would say, Amanda, why don't you make your motion?
Yeah, make a motion.
Make an amendment. Let's debate it, and we're going
to. Well, I'm not prepared to vote for this. It's an emergency ordinance.
If I may. The way the deal is currently structured, we are not acquiring the building. The building is going to be demolished and before closing, and therefore the property would pass into the hands of the city as a bare piece of property without improvements. If, as is being contemplated, we are going to acquire the property with a building on it, that's where the problem comes up that Mr. Abate has noted, that we would be buying not just the property but also the improvements on the property which we would then hold on to and look to improve. Those would not be available. We do not have the ability to fund that portion of the acquisition of the building with SDC funds. And that's where the problem comes up that the director has referred to.
Mike, if we took the emergency clause off and we voted on this next week in the ordinary course, does that do violence to the schedule that you have with TPL?
No, I believe we could accommodate that, Mr. Fisher.
Mayor, I'm going to make. I have the floor. I'd like to make a motion to.
I had the floor.
Oh no, he has the floor now.
I have the floor right now.
But you took it because I was in the middle of a course of conversation. What I was going to say was, if you leave the emergency clause on, I might vote for it next week as an emergency.
Well, we can put it back on.
We also have the option
of
doing other things.
We put it on next week, but I'd like to move to take the emergency clause off.
Okay, is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Roll call on removing the emergency clause.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye, and I might be willing to put it back on next week.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, the emergency clause is removed. It will come back for second reading next week. Thank you. Let's see if we can't finish up here before we lose a quorum. We have a couple more items.
356. Authorize the Water Bureau to acquire permanent easement necessary for construction of the Fulton Pump Station Improvements Project through direct negotiation or exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Portland Water Bureau, and with me running the machine is Keith Walker, the pump station and program storage program manager for the Water Bureau. I'll try and go through this as quickly as I can. We're in the latter stages of the design for the Fulton Pump Station replacement project. We've been in front of you several times over the last few years, and as it's progressed, and now we're at the next milestone that requires your action. This portion of the project requires us to build two large water pipelines, a 24 and a 30-inch pipeline, to connect with the existing water system. We're here to request that you authorize us to acquire an easement from Public Broadcasting that will allow for the construction and maintenance of these pipelines on property owned by OPB. So the existing pump station was originally constructed in 1912 on Southwest Nevada between McAdam and Virginia. The building has been expanded four separate times over the years, and it's each time we've been adding pump capacity. The pump station was identified as a top priority for replacement in 2006 and 2007 due to its poor condition. It's a critical facility that provides water directly to over 10,000 City of Portland services and a number of our wholesale customers west of the Willamette. In 2010, you authorized us to construct a new pump station within Willamette Park. It's about 700 feet to the east of the existing station on Nevada. You know that we've gone through a number of public processes. I'm going to skip through that a little bit and get to the chase. Oregon Public Broadcasting owns property both north and south of Nevada between McAdam and Willamette Park, so their offices and their satellite dishes. They have three satellite dishes north of Nevada, and they use Nevada as the main entrance to their facilities. Their vehicular access from McAdam is fairly constrained. And if you're looking at the satellite photo, you can see the satellite dishes to the north. This is OPB's property to the south. You can just sort of see where the pump station would go in that clump of trees. And then if you go to the left, there's a long, skinny building just on the very edge, and that's the existing pump station. So Nevada is this fairly small right-of-way in between the OPB studio and the satellite dishes. So during the course of the design process, we've met with OPB for over four different occasions to explain the impacts of their operations during construction and to hear their concerns. One of the main concerns was the large pipeline construction project that was going to be planned in Nevada. In addition to working with them on their operations, pipeline construction in Nevada is going to be challenging for a number of reasons. The new pipelines are going to be constructed parallel to the Washington County supply line. It's a 60-inch line located in Nevada. Construction in close proximity to this pipeline requires additional stabilization of that pipeline in order to prevent damage. McAdam, as you all, I'm sure, know, is a busy ODOT-controlled highway. There would be limited work hours during construction across McAdam, traffic delays for commuters. You can see that Nevada Street on the east side is much more narrow than the west side of Nevada, 32 feet versus 56 feet. This is going to make construction a lot more difficult due to the lack of space. We would be looking at having to stack the 24-inch and the 30-inch lines to which would increase our risk and increase our cost. And then, of course, due to the lack of space in Nevada, the new pipelines would need to be located right next to or adjacent to OPB's property line. This would require a temporary construction easement and a permanent maintenance easement for future access. So we looked at this. We looked at the problems. We looked at the issues that OPB's raised and came up with a different suggestion to an open trench construction from the park through Nevada, through McAdam, and that was to bore or tunnel the new pipelines. Our preliminary estimates for construction indicate that the cost to tunnel or to dig in Nevada and McAdam are about the same, in the range of $850,000 to $900,000. The bored pipeline option reduces or eliminates many of the construction impacts to OPB and is expected to reduce the construction duration for this portion of the pipelines from 4 to 6 months down to 2. But that means that we would need to have the pipelines go under. I'm going to figure out how to do this. Hang on just a second. The two pipelines would need to go under the property on the north side of OPB's South Dax lot. So the what you have in front of you, the upper shaded bar is the Washington County supply line in Nevada. The two lower bars are going to be the 30-inch and the 24-inch line. The yellow box on either end would be the bore pit that we would go down, dig down into, and then bore the lines through. So you can see that our two lines would need to go under the very northern portion of the parking lot of OPB's property, and that's why we're here. So that brings us to the subject of our request. We've hired a qualified consultant to appraise the easement rights needed and to negotiate with OPB in good faith to obtain the easement. Our consultant has been instructed to complete all negotiations in accordance with eminent domain procedures provided for in ORS Chapter 35 with respect to valuation of the property rights taken, notice, and relocation, if any. So pursuant to ORS 35, Chapter 35, we're now requesting the council give us authority to acquire permanent easement through direct negotiation or by use of the city's eminent domain authority if necessary. Now, that's our last resort. It always has been. In the eight years I've been here, we have yet to acquire a property through eminent domain or condemnation. OPB has indicated that they're in favor of the bored pipeline alternative and they'll support acquisition of the easement. And we are proceeding with ORS Chapter 35 procedures, including authorizing eminent domain, because any delay in negotiations for the easement is a risk to our overall pump station construction schedule. We anticipate beginning construction, putting it out to bid in November of this year and beginning construction in February of 2014. Authorizing us to proceed with negotiations now will help this project remain on schedule. I know that OPB has proposed language to the ordinance talking about their concerns about the construction, and I would urge you to pass the ordinance as it's currently drafted. We will be working with OPB on their construction concerns, but that's not what this ordinance is about. This ordinance is simply the acquisition of the permanent easement for us to put the pipelines in. OPB's primary concerns are actually the above-ground construction issues that are going to occur on Nevada. And we will be, with Keith and his folks, his team, working with them to alleviate the concerns that they have. And the boring option is a good example of how we've met with them and discussed their concerns and come up with an intelligent alternative that resolves most of them. If you have any questions, either Keith or I should be able to answer them.
Questions?
I wanted to comment that the public involvement statement is exemplary. So thank you for explaining how you got to where we are.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you both. Is there anyone here to testify on this item?
Yes, we have one person, Rebecca Morris. Please come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your time. I'm Rebecca Morris. I'm the General Counsel for Oregon Public Broadcasting. OPB has been discussing the Fulton Pump Station Improvement Project with the Portland Water Bureau for nearly a year due to the project's proximity to our studios. We appreciate the open and cooperative nature of our relationship with the project team, and we look forward to maintaining that positive relationship as the project moves forward. That said, we have been concerned from the start that the construction and maintenance phases of the project could have significant negative impacts on the safety of OPB's employees and equipment, our ability to continue our statewide over-the-air broadcast in both radio and television, the quality of our work product, and ultimately our ability to provide the important public services that are at the heart of our nonprofit mission. OPB is one of the largest cultural and educational institutions in the region, delivering excellence in public broadcasting to more than 1.5 million people each week. Our television, radio, and website content is free.